Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're with Reverend Harris. Reverend Harris with Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. Here with me and Dr. Gene Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia. We're happy to be on the show again tonight, live across the world. We thank our listening audience from Jamaica, Nigeria, South Africa, everyone from the United States of America, the UK, just everywhere. We just want to thank you for your support. Thank you for following us all these many years that I founded this radio show. We feel that this radio show has been a radio show of empowerment, to empower people, to educate people. You know, the motto of my Freedom School, the motto of the National Network in Action, both these organizations I have founded, the motto is motivate, energize, organize, and mobilize to take our community to a higher level. And I believe if we're able to do those five components, I believe that we can be able to have change here in America. If our ancestors was able to make change here in America with no resources from the standpoint of technology, our ancestors did not have Facebooks. They did not have texting. They did not have Twitter. They did not have Blog Talk Radio. They did not have the many things that we have today, but yet they were still able to mobilize and to organize and to educate and to motivate and move their community in a time when they did not have what we have today. So Real Talk listeners, you know, we're just excited to be on the air again, and we have no excuse not to be able to make change here in America. And so that's why we started this radio show over a year ago, so that we will be able to really capture an audience, be able to dissect and to operate. If you notice, the name of our show is called Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. That's myself and Dr. Gene Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Gene Kennedy will be coming on the air here just to let everyone know a little secret about Dr. Kennedy. She is not in Atlanta, Georgia right now. She is not in Atlanta, Georgia. She is in Mississippi, Fresno. Yes, that's right. She is here in Fresno. We're just waiting for her to come on the show, waiting for her number to light up. I believe she has jet lag. I believe she missed one of her flights to come here, and she had to catch a later flight. But we just thank God that she made it here. I have not had an opportunity to see her yet physically, but I wanted her to enjoy her family and her grandbabies and children and sisters and what have you here before I went over there and showed my face. And so I think that she is happy to be back home here in Fresno Beach. She's been away for about 2 years. She's been away for about 2.5 years, I believe, in Atlanta, Georgia. And today, Real Talk with the Number One Doctors, this show on 10/18/2015 at 8:06, we are going to donate. We are going to let Dr. Kennedy know this is her show tonight. We're going to honor her this show tonight. And the show is called Welcome Back, Dr. Gene Kennedy. Welcome back, Dr. Gene Kennedy, back to Fresno, California. We have missed her for so many years, 3 years that she has left. And we just want to dedicate this show to her tonight. We just want her to know she's very tired and she's been playing with her grandbabies and what have you, and just reflecting. I can just see her right now at home with her grandbabies and her son, looking at family portraits that could be on the wall, just having memories of things that when she was here 20-something years ago. And that's a lot to process. that's a lot to process at one time. And so, you know, we just thank God for her journey. We know that there's a case that we're going to be working on with her here. We're going to be having a town hall meeting here, and hopefully she'll be going into some of that. She will be preaching at my church on First Sunday. We're excited about that, and we're just happy that she's back. I'm happy that she's back. I cannot wait to see her. I'm probably going to do her like Dino do Flintstone. When Fred would walk in the house, Dino would just charge at Fred and just knock him over and lick him and all that. Well, I may not lick her, but I think we will be excited to see her and gather around her. And no further more ado, we're going to go ahead and bring Dr. King Kennedy on. We're going to donate. We're going to this was her show tonight. We're going to dedicate this show to her tonight. Welcome back, Dr. King Kennedy, back to Fresno, California. And I want to say this before she comes on the line. You know, this is a sister who I've seen grow. She's someone who is not one to take credit. She's always doing heavy lifting. She's an organizational psychologist. She loves the Lord. She knows the Bible. She's a preacher daughter. She's just a whole total package of a woman that you would want to see. I've seen her grow into consciousness. I believe I can say honestly, when I first met her, I don't believe she was conscious. When I first met her, I don't believe she really understood the social dynamics, the political process, how the politics side of the church plays, and ministers and pastors and the different alliances that goes on, and the game plan, and the politicians, and the mayors, and the city councilmen. But I can sit here today and say that I'm proud to say and take ownership of helping to develop her, helping her to understand, helping her to get an idea of the truth of what's going on in our community, in the black community, in the brown community, and just different things across the world. And she'll be the first to tell you now. She'll be the first to tell you. She'll say, she'll say, now, you know, Rem Harris, we don't agree on everything now. One thing she'll tell you that she don't agree on is recall. But I think as time went on, I think she kind of understood why I recall politicians. But when we first started, when she first met me, she was like, oh, no, I didn't say that. Rem Harris said that. He said the recall. I didn't say the recall. The mayor of Fresno or the city councilman or Cynthia Sterling. And so, but anyway, I just thank God for her spirit. I thank God that she is with us here again in Fresno. And no further ado, we're gonna go ahead and time her in. Dr. Jim Kennedy, welcome to Real Talk with the Number One Doctor. Welcome to your radio show. Welcome back to Fresno, California. Go ahead and take the floor and just take your time tonight and just tell us how you're doing, and we're just glad to see you.
Well. My goodness. I have to kiss the ground of Fresno. I am back in Fresno, ladies and gentlemen, and it's good to be home for a minute here to just smell the air in Fresno and to look and see. And I saw clouds in the sky, and I thought, wait a bit, I thought that California never has rain. And for a minute there, coming from Georgia, where it is always, always, always raining, ladies and gentlemen, I thought maybe I brought a cloud with me to give you guys some showers of rain. And so it was just wonderful to, again, come into the Fresno airport and see so much traffic of foot traffic of people coming in. I came through the Dallas airport, and You know, I cannot tell the last time I went through the Dallas airport. Well, I did recently, but coming that route into Fresno anyway, and I never realized how very, very busy Dallas is. But, of course, Atlanta Airport definitely is the number one busiest airport, and so we get used to that. So, again, it was good to make that travel. I wanted to make sure that I wouldn't miss my plane, Reverend Harris, so I actually stayed over at the airport the night before. My flight was leaving early in the morning, and I wanted nothing. I didn't want a traffic. I didn't want someone's tires flying off the street. I didn't want some truck coming up and stopping the traffic from moving. I didn't want workers on the street bringing the lanes down to one lane or two lanes. I did not want anything stopping me from coming and getting on that plane and coming into Fresno. So I made it a point to take myself to the airport the night before to find a nice little place where I could just lay up and be able to be in the airport ready to go to come in. I was highly motivated as I was in that plane, thinking of seeing my grandchildren and my son, my sister, her family. And I have not yet seen you yet, Reverend Harris. And I think that, you know how they do those when they play the football game and you see these two guys jump up on one another and they bounce up on one another. Well, I imagine myself running and seeing you running. We're going to just bump up on one another. But don't bump me too hard, though, because I'm not as buff as you are. But I'm looking forward to us joining in and seeing Brother Patch. Oh, my goodness. Brother Patch feels like my family. And just to see familiar faces again. So I am looking forward to these few weeks here with family here and connecting, with folks. My sister came by and took me to a place this Sunday, and I couldn't get into this place without seeing three and four and five people that were saying, "Is that Dr. Kennedy? Wait a minute, Dr. Kennedy? Is that you, Dr. Kennedy?" And my sister was like, "My God, I'm going to have to put a chain on you." She goes, "We will never get to where we're getting. Every second person is seeing you and asking if that's you." And, again, it felt so good to be in a place that knows me. I'm in Georgia. I'm still trying to navigate my way through Georgia. I'm still trying to brand myself in Georgia. Still trying to navigate the social network of people. Still trying to get a feel for the culture in Georgia. Still trying to understand the dance that Georgia does. It's a fascinating place. So much happens there, but you got to have an anchor. You got to know who you are when you come into Georgia. There's so much is going on. Anything that you want to dream, you can make it happen there if you have the know-how. And I think sometimes when we're coming in from these cities, a city like Fresno, that indeed is a very big city, but the mindset of the people are just so different. I don't want to make it sound negative because, you know, sometimes the pace. Let me tell you something. Well, today we went to pick up my grandson, and my son parked the car, and I didn't want to take my purse. And I said, "Do you have a towel? Do you have something I can, you know, put over the car?" He goes, "Mom." He goes, "That's okay. The car's going to be safe." And I was like, no. Let me put my purse underneath the car, underneath the seat. And he's like, "Come on, Mom." He says, "Mom, this is Fresno. Come on. Nothing happens over at this side of town." But I'm so sensitized now. I've lived in Georgia. You don't even need a paper bag on your chair, on your car, because that just allows people to say, "What's in that brown paper bag?" And they'll come in your car just to be nosy, and they'll break the windows if they got to. And so I saw myself a few times just in the few hours that I've been here. I said to my son, "You sure the car door is locked?" He went for a jog around the block today, and I went with him with my granddaughter. And I said, "Okay, you know, let me just make sure the doors are locked and make sure the windows are locked." And he's saying, "Boy, what have they done to you in Atlanta, Mom?" He says, "You told me. You're paranoid, Mom. What's happened? But you see, that's what happens when you go to the big cities, and you begin to see a whole nother life. You know, we our children, we try so much to shelter our children until they get out in the real world and when they see the real world. And I feel like Fresno, in a way, has done so much to shelter us. And when we get out into the big cities, we're having to swim or drown. And I have learned very quickly to swim real fast, otherwise I would drown. And so even when Reverend Harris talks about his position and our position on some of the political frontiers, yes, he's right. In the beginning, I was very naive to how you handle politicians and very naive as to how we make them aware that they work for us. We're not working for them. And so very protective of the politicians. But over the years, I've come to see how we do heavy lifting in the South, how we don't in the South, how we will sit people down in the South. My goodness, I've been to meetings where the room was full of a mixed company, but the program was being headed by the black community, and they would tell folks who weren't black, straight up, you are here to listen. You will not talk. There is no place in here for you, for your voice to be heard. And I'm like, oh, no, I know I didn't just hear what I thought I heard. And they don't play. And neither are they the Black Panthers saying that either. This is groups that aren't even affiliated with the Black Panthers, but they understand that it's important to make sure that the paradigm is set by the individuals. When people talk about Black Lives Matter, maybe we don't understand what that means on the West Coast, but certainly when you look at the South and see how so many of our black men are just being shot in the back or just being thrown down to the ground, just being disregarded and disrespected, how the private enterprise of the prison system has made money and is continuing to make money because they didn't go out and build these big prison complexes for nothing. They expect to get their return on their dollar, but they're going to lock somebody up in that place. And it's going to be people who look like us that will be locked up. They did not go and put mortar and bricks together just so that they sit there looking cute. They expect those places to be occupied. So they expect the police to do their job or do whatever they got to do to arrest people. And so it's a different mindset, different mindset on the West Coast, in the South, and on the West Coast. It's a different mindset. We talk about our rights here, and we certainly do protest for our rights, and we certainly do stand up for our rights. And you get into the South where you can still smell Jim Crow around. You can still see his handprint around the communities, in the workplace, in your establishment. You still see people just fixing their mouth to call you boy. Huh? You just see people walking with their hands on their hips, ready to pull out the gun, loaded at that. People drive around with loaded guns. Did you hear me? You will see signs in churches when you are in the South that says, please do not bring your gun to church. They have to literally put a sign out in front of their churches. And now, since we have the shootings going on in South Carolina, you now see more police around churches. You would think it was the capital of the city there. You'd think there was some kind of a politician or governor that's in that area. Now you see police all over the churches, all over the church grounds now because of the situation that's taking place. Things are changing in our world, people. Things are changing. And some places recognize the change far quicker than others. And so we have to really understand what time of the day it is. And let me say this for a minute here and then bring Reverend Harris in so we can have a conversation. I was on the plane coming in and sat next to a gentleman that was on his way to Lemoore, and he was just assigned to Lemoore just since August. He had gone home for a minute there to be with his family, but was coming back, and there were several men that was actually on the plane going to their Navy base. And so he happened to sit right next to me, and I didn't feel like sitting next to a stranger, so I greeted him and he greeted me, and then we just exchanged conversation. I said to him, you know, you're going to Fresno, family or business? And he said, actually, I'm on my way to Lemoore. And I said, oh, Lemoore. I said, well, I said, what is in Lemoore outside of the military base? And he goes, well, that's exactly where I'm going. So that struck up a conversation, and we started talking. And one of the things that he was talking about, having coming from Virginia, and being over there for so long and seeing so much going on and so much progressive behavior and saying, what is going on in the valley? What happens in Fresno? He goes, we try to leave the base to coming to Fresno to connect with people, but we just can't connect with the people. It's like, you know, we see black people around because this is a brother, a black brother, and he says, but, you know, it's like we can't find any culture in Fresno. We are not finding any connections. He goes, we're on the base, and when we try to get a minute away from the base, we're looking for some action, looking for something, we're looking for some culture, and we can't find any culture in the Central Valley. It's still the same. What an opportunity that we have, brothers and sisters, to create the culture for our people, but we don't. You know, and that may be well for another show. So why is it that we don't have the culture here in Fresno across the board? Where is the barbecue places? One or two is not enough competition. The barbershops, one or two or three, that is not enough competition. The club that caters to certain cultural lifestyle, you know, the different entertainment areas that we bring in, affordable entertainment, by the way, because not everybody has an $80 or $100 ticket to go see a singer or a rapper or someone. I heard Diana Ross was out here just this weekend, but her ticket was the most expensive ticket at the fairground. And so, again, we have got to look at how we keep our people here. It's already enough of a culture shock when brothers and sisters coming from the South, where they can see so much of themselves, and then they come into the Central Valley and see such a large population of our Hispanic brothers and sisters and Asian brothers and sisters and Mom brothers and sisters and so few blacks. And then they see so few blacks that have titles, but all it is a title. It doesn't have the power behind the title. Isn't it interesting how a person can come from outside of this area and recognize somebody who has a title, but very quickly pick up that all they have is a title? The power is not behind the title to make the decisions. They just have a title. They may be a city council person, but they don't have a whole lot of power behind them. They may be a president of a university or a principal of a school, but they don't have a whole lot of power behind them to make decisions. They may be heads of various departments under the government entity, but they have very few and working power behind them. They can't call the shots. They can't call the shots. They don't have the power to call the shots. They wear a nice title, but there is nothing else behind the title. My. And when you go to other places and see people biting down into their areas, holding some strength behind them, being able to be movers and shakers for what it's worth. And yet you come into somewhere like the Central Valley and all we have are fancy titles, big churches, but no mouth, no teeth in those areas, not knowing how to keep their people. They're floating all over the place trying to find a place that they can call home. So we do quite well here in the Central Valley. We have nice homes. We are very middle class. We do quite well for ourselves. We go to the universities and we get our degrees and we get a job here or there. We have a nice retirement. We have a known name in our communities, but yet we have no teeth to really make the kind of changes that needs to happen. So we get along to get along. And while the rest of the world, rest of cities, struggle to maintain a voice and a sense of identity, willing to take a loss, willing to lay down their lives for a cause, we would just be like the Good Samaritan. You know that story, the Good Samaritan, laying there, and three renowned individuals walked right past him, stepped over him, didn't even want to help him while he lay there in the gutter. But it took a Samaritan, somebody who was not even of his own culture, to stop and to say, oh, my God, this man needs some help. Let me pick him up. Let me put him on my own horse, my donkey. Let me take him to the nearest hotel, and let me pay his bill. And when I come back this way, I'll check on him and make sure he's okay. And so we hear the scenario of that story of the Good Samaritan. And how many Good Samaritans do we have here in Fresno? And this is why I just love the heart and the spirit of Brother Harris and his congregation, because they're not just people who come together just for the sake of coming together for worship, but they're also people who take action. As I look at your Facebook, Brother Harris, and I see Sister Portia out there working in the Freedom School with the farms, and I see so many of your other Brother Patch out there being right there at your church, making himself available for those who knock at the door and need help. Pastor McCoy, seeing how he's involved in the politics of this community, trying to maintain a sense of accountability for them and being able to represent and even think of bringing Reverend Farrakhan here, Minister Farrakhan here several years ago, and taking the brunt of the criticism of his own peers, but nonetheless went ahead, was instrumental in bringing in our representative from the Black Caucus the other day, Brother Lewis, and to see him making those kind of strides. And then your young people being part of the Freedom School and introducing it to other young people. I tip my hat to your church. I tip my hat to the members, because they just don't come and congregate on a Sunday and say hallelujah, praise the Lord, and go home. But they are also disciples. They're also workers within their community. And so somebody must be doing something right here in Fresno. Somebody must be doing something right. And so it's good to be home for a minute, to smell the roses and to just be here for a minute to reconnect with folks and just see what they're doing. Let me mention that we'll have a town hall meeting that will be coming up, again, sponsored by Reverend Harris's church. And we're going to talk about some of the laws and some of the policies and some of the things that we would like to have a support of our community and our representatives. You know, it's not easy to just get up and go to one state over the other. We have to make sure that we don't jump out of the frying pan into the fire. And when we are so fluid because of the job market where we can go from place to place to live and not feel like we're on a lockdown, we must also make sure that when we leave from one state to the other, that we have reciprocity, that we have representation, that we have our abilities to be free and to have equal opportunity for all. Otherwise, we will stay in our own little corner and never come out of that area and look at what the opportunities are. So we're going to have that town hall conversation to make sure that as we travel this nationwide, that we also understand what our rights are, and so that we can be well taken care of. You know, you go to Mexico and other foreign countries, and if you don't know what your rights are, and you're put into a prison system or into their system, if you don't know who to call upon, if you don't know where your embassy is, you can be lost in the system for months and years, and nobody ever knows where you are. Well, you know, that's not much different these days in going from city and state to state. You can leave your own state and get picked up in another state and be put away, and folks don't even know where you are, treating you as if you're not even a citizen of the United States of America. Yes, you can be put into systems, into prisons and jail systems, and nobody knows where you are. And so, again, we're not talking about a foreign country. We're talking about right here in the United States of America. And so we're on a mission to make sure that we educate our people and mobilize our people and strengthen our people so that when we have to go somewhere like to support Ferguson and the issues that are going on, we can go and not get lost in the system. And people are wondering, my goodness, if we send a busload of people somewhere for that process, where are they? Who has them? Which jail has them on a lockdown? And we're able to maintain our rights across the board, across the board. So, again, it's good to be home for a minute. And Reverend Harris, I thank you again for the space that you provide for me here on our Blog Talk Radio, my brother. You there, sir? Are you there, sir? Am I still on the air? Well. I don't want to have dead time. I don't want to be talking out in the air. Reverend Harris, are you there? Well, I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, it may be that I'm still on the air live, and so, again, I'm not sure if I'm connected or if I've been disconnected. I said, I just don't want to pop off the air like that, but let me just maybe end here. I'm going to cut off the phone for a minute and get back online if I can and see if I've been disconnected through the system. Okay, peace and love. Peace and love. I just got a text. What did I tell you? I tell you, I love technology. Just as I was getting ready to press that off button, I just got a text coming in that says, keep talking. Well, I tell you something. I am learning to respect this technology. I have as much issues with technology as I do with human beings. But at the end of the day, I have to still respect the technology. You know, I was saying to someone the other day, because I've just gotten a new phone, and it's got too many buttons for me to handle. I guess there's a difference between a smartphone versus maybe the phone I had wasn't a smartphone. That's not an understatement. The phone is smart enough to let me know, even right now, that, hey, keep talking. And I was saying to the gentleman as I was trying to get him to queue up my various abilities on this phone, I was saying, you know, I just struggle with the way technology seems to be taken over. And you have to correct me on that. It's not that technology is taking over. It's how we utilize technology. And I remember saying to him, even my time as a professor, having face-to-face studies with my students, face-to-face lectures and conversation, now we're online. And it's like you can hardly read a person online. We're teaching online, and yes, we have larger classes online. It's great because we can charge more to come to school, more to register for classes. But we have no connection with our students. It's a virtual classroom. You can't read your student. You can't look at your student and say, what's going on with you today? What's happening with you? Why can you not do that paper? What I hear you telling me something, but your face tells me something else. We don't have that ability anymore for that social interaction, for that connection. We don't have it like we used to have it when we are face-to-face with our students, when we can read a student and recognize. I remember teaching a class a few years ago, and I had a student who would perpetually keep coming in late. He would always be late within 15 to 20 minutes of the class. And I have some of my own colleagues that would lock that door. You can't come in 1 minute past that time when it's on, which I think is a little bit too much myself. But this student would always come in late. And I decided I needed to sit with him and ask him, why do you keep coming into this class late? What is going on with you? I didn't know if he was disregarding me, disrespecting the class. I didn't know what his issue was. And I had to ask this brother, I said, why do you continually come to class late? What is it that you want to get out of this class? And what is your major? What do you want to do with your major? I'm trying to find a place I could connect with him so we could have this conversation. And he says, well, you know, I want to be a firefighter. And I said, but brother, there's no way you're going to be a firefighter showing up late. My goodness, people's houses will be burnt down. They'll lose their life.